Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. Teresa, what's going on? How are we doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. A little tired because you know, when you watch a game where a team staves off elimination to force a game six, and they do it getting out to a 55-point lead. Guys, we were busy looking up the biggest postseason routes in NBA history, and they were three off until they pulled the starters. So, they were this close to some NBA history last night, and still, they're still playing. And they did it without Ja Morant, with him on the bench. And then after the game, getting on the mic and kind of saying, Grizz in seven. So we'll see if I'm back in Memphis on Monday night.
I mean, at least you got to start writing early, right? I mean, like, that's a beautiful thing for a late-night game.
Oh, Joe, I was written in at the end of the third quarter. So it was just a matter of sticking the final numbers and such. So, as soon as Memphis pulled the starters, oh, yes, it was good. So... but it was still a late night, so it's going to be interesting. They are the youngest team to be in the second round of the playoffs in 25 years, and they were the second youngest team in the NBA during the regular season. And here's the thing, they're almost so young, you can't tell them what they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, Teresa, what do you make of last night? Because, I mean, it was such a butt-kicking by the Grizzlies that they gave the Warriors last night. They were right there in game four, had the lead basically the whole game without Ja Morant. What do you think this all means, and how do you kind of respond to that if you're Golden State heading into game six?
Well, here's the thing. The Grizzlies were 20-5 without Ja Morant during the regular season, so they're used to playing without him. And last night they played like the team that they were during the regular season, kind of for the first time this postseason, okay? They went, they led the NBA in rebounds, offensive rebounds, steals, blocks. I mean, just all sorts of the little things, right? Second chance points. And that's the team that I saw last night. They just thumped the Warriors and all that. Now, Golden State had been averaging 19 turnovers a game in this series. They had 22 last night. The biggest key was the fact that Grizzlies dominated the boards. Golden State had won the edge in rebounding the first four games. Memphis got it last night. Steven Adams, who, he missed a week in the first two games of this series because he was on the health and safety protocols, COVID. We're still in that issue. Steve Kerr missed the last two games because he tested positive before game four. And Adams is the guy who really makes this team go down in the paint. And he set the tenor last night. He had 13 rebounds, six on the offensive side. And, when you can do that and get 25 points off of those turnovers, that kind of set the tenor. I mean, and Golden State looked sloppy. I mean, yes, Memphis hit a franchise postseason record 18 threes, but they were getting the ball, Steph had a turnover. They had like a series of possessions where they just kept turning the ball over. And when the Grizzlies can get the ball and start running in transition, that's something that they just thrive on. It's almost like a feeding frenzy at that point, and that's what they were able to do last night.
I'm just blown away by 37 assists on 47 buckets. And I wonder, because again, obviously, they're not better without Ja Morant, but I do feel like maybe some players elevate, right? And then there's a collective style of play that has to get better, has to change, and maybe it benefits some guys. But also, Teresa, just like you mentioned it, Adams, I mean, it just looks to me like, and what does Golden State really have inside to throw at them? I thought Adams wouldn't be much of a factor because I thought they'd put him in the pick and roll and run him ragged on D and kind of render him ineffective, but it hasn't worked. Is that the key to getting this back for a game seven? Just continue to bludgeon them on the boards and make them adjust to you being bigger if you're the Grizzlies?
Absolutely, Joe. I mean, that's the thing. They were kind of going big and bully ball, if you want to call it that. I mean, Steven Adams is 6'11", and their tallest guy is like Andrew Wiggins. And let's not forget, they call him a forward, but Draymond Green is kind of their center. And, you know, he's 6'6". Jaren Jackson Jr., a guy who definitely elevated his play last night, he's 6'9". You know, he's kind of, you know, they like to call him kind of a bit of a playing unicorn. And Dylan Brooks said last night that when he's playing his best, no one can match him. You know, if you try to put a big man on him, he's too fast. He'll go around him. And if you put a smaller guy on him, he'll just, you know, shoot right over him. And, you know, he really helped set the tone for the Grizzlies early last night. He had 10 points in the first quarter. And I saw a little graphic on ESPN. They're the first team this postseason to have five different players score at least 10 points in a quarter in this postseason. It's impressive. I mean, you know, they've got guys who can step up. And last night, three guys all scored at least 21 points for the Grizzlies. You know, Desmond Bain, Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones, guys, who's the backup point guard here, who could probably start on many teams in the NBA, and yet he's backing up Ja. And he came out 21 points, 9 assists, 0 turnovers. Grizzlies took ridiculously good care of the ball last night. So that's the thing. If the Grizzlies can play that way as they did last night, and again, they did that for much, if not all, of the regular season, it's going to be interesting to see if Golden State, Steph, Clay, you know, Jordan Poole, who's been so hot this postseason, he was held to 3 points. So, you know, they could go back to the Bay, to their new home, to the Chase Center, and the threes could start falling. They've won 7 straight games in San Francisco, including all 5 in the postseason. So, you know, they could either absolutely go there and do what Steph said they were going to do last night and whoop that trick, and finish off this series. But if Memphis plays the way they did last night, and it was the most dominant performance that they've shown yet in this postseason, then they've got every reason to think they can bring this back for a game 7. And if they're here in Memphis with a crowd like last night, then watch out.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press on with us here on Robbie and Rex Show. So, Teresa, we've been talking about this throughout the show today. I'm interested to get your thoughts on it. The Predators obviously just got swept, and it was not competitive with Colorado. What do you make of kind of the state of that franchise and how they get back to being a team that can compete with the elite teams in the NHL?
It's a great question, Robbie, and that's the thing. They got absolute career years. Roman Josi, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson had, you know, one of his best seasons in a couple years. They certainly earned those contracts this year. But the problem is, and we saw, you know, development from the young guys. You know, Tanner Jeannot led all rookies in goals. You know, we saw things, and it just leads me to this thing. You know, UC Saros is a Vezina Trophy candidate for the first time. So much went good. But for a team that led the NHL in fighting majors, penalty minutes per game, it just feels like that, quote, aggressive identity that we heard so much about. You know, when you're averaging, you know, essentially 4 penalties a game, that just seems to be a physical style that, yeah, it can work for you for a while, but it felt like when the calendar flipped to April, it felt like this team was done physically. So, you know, as much as they found an identity, is that an identity that can actually work for them, you know, moving forward year in, year out, and make them the playoff contender they want to be? It just seems like that's a tough ask to have. Because, again, you've got to have, you know, Roman Josi told us, you've got to have some momentum going into the postseason. This team did not. They won 1 of their final 9 games, counting the playoff sweep. So, you know, exactly how you fix that, I'm not sure. But it does feel like the Nashville Predators, you know, David Poile at the trade deadline, I went back and I looked at some of the stories. He said that the one goal was to make the playoffs. They did that. When you're that not competitive, does it really matter? And I think that's where they've got to have some serious discussions. You know, John Hines, is this the guy to keep building with? And yes, David Poile. You know, he's 72, the winningest GM in NHL history. His fingerprints are on every piece of this franchise. But is this the time to maybe think about making a change? They've got to have those talks.
To that point, Teresa. You know, Adam Vingan, you know, wrote the column about the ownership. We've talked about this before, about it's a unique situation, obviously, with an ownership group. It's different than most pro sports franchises. But what about just the idea that the fans want to hear from them, that they should have some kind of a voice right now in explaining things and explaining their vision.
Well, that's the challenge. You know, yes, they have somebody who, you know, it represents them at all the NHL meetings. And you know, these are some very rich people who have been very successful. And, you know, I did like what some of the points that Adam made, because, you know, they should be able to look at this product and see you didn't have the normal buzz in the building. Now, that happens when you lose the first two on the road and you come back and, you know, you try. But this franchise has been doing so well for so long. 15 playoff bursts since 2004. That's second in the NHL. You know, the current streak, 8 straight, that's tied for second longest with Washington behind Pittsburgh. So they've done so much right. But that's the thing. If they don't take the deep dive and figure this out and make sure, you know, this is going to determine what happens over these next 3 to 5 years. You know, this competitive rebuild, whatever it is David Poile wanted to end up calling it, you know, it worked to an extent. But can you look at this team and say, I mean, everything went so right this year, and they still squeaked into the postseason. Will this work next year? If you don't get 40 goals from Duchesne, and if you know, what happens if you don't, you know, can't do a deal with Philip Forsberg? So, you know, there's some serious questions that, you know, you can leave them to David Poile, as they have, but you would hope that maybe some of these folks are talking about, you know, is now a time maybe to start looking at transitioning, at least maybe at the GM position. So, and they're going to have to make that decision, because if they keep letting things go as it's been, with, you know, Sean Henry and David Poile taking care of the team and doing everything, then, you know, we may be in the same position with the Predators in a year.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press, our guest here on Robbie and Rextra. Teresa, great stuff as always. We'll see if you're back in Memphis for Game 7.
Thank you. And, yeah, I'm already checking hotel prices.
Yeah, I bet you are. Teresa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Teresa Walker from the AP, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts, reactions on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Grizzlies, Predators, wherever you want to go on the table coming up next. One of the things I love about betting my favorite sports is that I'm always finding new player props or game props that I like. And what's cool about FanDuel Sportsbook is you can combine prop bets from multiple games and now even multiple sports as well. It's called Same Game Parlay Plus, and you can only find them on FanDuel. Combine NBA playoff player props you love with your favorite baseball home run hitters for a chance to score an even bigger payout. So maybe you like Jimmy Butler over on points for the Miami Heat, and you like Nikita Kucherov for the Tampa Bay Lightning over on points as well. That's where I would go with it, but you take it any way you want to take it. If you don't want to build your own same game parlay, check out their popular same game parlay section where you can join the bets other users are jumping on. And if you're new to FanDuel, sign up with promo code ROB to get your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Make every moment more and download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Just use promo code ROB so they know that I sent you. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Nashville's own Big Machine Distillery wants to send you to the inaugural Tennessee Whiskey Trail experience to celebrate International Tennessee Whiskey Day coming up on May 21st at Nissan Stadium. Text WHISKEY to 615-737-1025. That's WHISKEY to 615-737-1025 to enter for your chance to win a pair of tickets. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Teresa Walker for joining us in the last segment. We'll have Hal Gill coming up here in about 10 minutes at 9:30. Get his thoughts on the Preds. What a butt-whooping last night for the Grizzlies against the Golden State Warriors. They win 134-95. They just destroyed Golden State last night. And as Teresa mentioned, it was a 55-point lead at one point, and that game was really over before it began. I mean, the good news, I guess, if you're Golden State is you didn't have to play Steph and Klay all that much. But what a dominant performance in Game 5 last night for the Grizz.
What if someone told you the only stat you know is that Golden State outscores Memphis 28-15 in the fourth quarter of Game 5. What's your final score? It's probably Golden State, like, probably I figure, okay, so they came back and they won a close game or something like that. They still lost by 39 points. Wow. And Teresa bringing up Tyus Jones. That is, I mean, it is nice to have him as your backup point guard. He is a good basketball player. And I agree, he could start on a fair amount of teams in this league. He's not dynamic athletically. But he is more of a threat as a shooter, you know, and you got to honor that, and it makes it a different dynamic defensively. He's 4 from 7 from 3. Again, no turnovers, like you said. I mean, they had 9 turnovers, you know. That's along with 55, you know, an 18 plus 18 on the boards. And, again, just the stat that blows me away, 37 for 47. 47 of their buckets were – of their 47 buckets, 37 were assisted.
Yeah.
That's great team basketball. So, I mean, I still think it's an uphill battle to win tomorrow in the Bay. But, I mean, that's a heck of a – you can't really ask for a better vault into that game.
Well, it's interesting, the point that you've brought up earlier on the show. I mean, they've gone a little bigger in the last couple of games without Ja Morant. And it's – I mean, look, they led the whole game in Game 4. And then it got away from them at the end, and they missed some free throws, and Golden State capitalized on that. That's kind of what I think back to. Game 1 was right there for the taking, if you're Memphis. Draymond got tossed out of the game. Game 4 was right there for the taking, and then you win last night. Like, you could very easily have won the series by now if you're Memphis. And now, instead, you're down 3-2 heading into a tough environment for Game 6. But to Teresa's point, a game like last night, that's got to give you some confidence if you're Memphis heading into even on the road in Game 6.
They've without Ja, the last two games, they've outplayed Golden State really, like way more. I mean, of the 96 minutes, I mean, they've outplayed them clearly for 80 of them,
yeah.
Right? 75 of them. I mean, Golden State kind of gradually overtook them in the last game, but – no, they should have confidence. Now, Steve Kerr, I think, will be back tomorrow. I don't know if that's been made official. Maybe he won't be. But I think they've missed him. I mean, he's a really good coach. And this is, for him, it's like, what's his adjustment now to – because I felt like Memphis, after a terrible defensive – because Game 3 with Ja, I mean, Golden State rolled in that game, and Memphis looked hapless defensively. And then the next game, no Ja, and it's not because of him defensively, but – they had their defense was so good at helping and being in the gaps, and it was like an amoeba-like kind of zone-looking thing, and they got out on the shooters, and they just looked so good defensively. Dylan Brooks is very much an asset in that way. So what's the Steve Kerr adjustment to the bigger team and the way they're defending Golden State? That'll be really interesting. The problem is he doesn't have a personnel adjustment to make. You know, there's no James Wiseman available. I mean, they have one big, Kevon Looney. And like Teresa was saying, Draymond plays the 5. He's like their point guard / center, you know, in that small lineup. But that's, I mean, Jared Jackson is tough to guard. He is a problem. It's really, really a fascinating Game 6 coming.
Kevin on the text line says, turnovers to the key. Memphis had a ton of unforced turnovers in the first 4 games. Last night, they took care of the ball and kept forcing turnovers. 22 turnovers, by the way, last night. For Golden State.
And Golden State is a turn. I mean, they turn it over too often. I mean, look, Steph, great, all-time great player, obviously. He only had 2 turnovers last night, but he will make the what-are-you-doing pass. I mean, Poole had 4 turnovers and 3 points. Poole had more turnovers than points last night. Clearly, you can't have that from Jordan Poole if you're Golden State and win. Draymond had, I mean, he had 5 assists, but he had 5 turnovers. You know, and he will get into that taking too risky a pass in transition too. So I agree, that's a big key. And rebounding, though, I mean, 18 offensive rebounds means that's so many more cracks at it if you're the Grizzlies. So they've got a pretty good formula going right now, and they got a chance to bring it back.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Dennis on the text line, going back to the conversation earlier with the Preds. Is it a problem with the system that it seems the only way to become an elite team in the NHL is to tank a few years to gather top 5 picks? This is coming from Dennis on the text line. Well, I don't know if I – like, let's go through the past few Stanley Cup champions. Tampa Bay has won the last two. And yes, Stamkos was a high draft pick. You know, Hedman was a good draft pick. But other than that, like, they've got, you know, Vasilevsky, they found a little bit later in the draft. You found Kucherov, I think, in the third round. And they've been a good team for a while. I mean, they were in the cup final back in 2015.
I mean, Braden Point never gets talked about with their success.
So it's not a lot of good players. It's not the only way to do it. I mean, St. Louis, they didn't have a high draft pick heading into 2019. Washington won it in 18. Yeah, at Ovechkin, but that was
going way
15 years ago.
I mean, still key.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're going way back. Yeah, I mean, it's not – I mean, you could look at the same – you could look at the NFL, right, and we'll see if, you know, Trevor Lawrence brings Duval back. But that's what you see a lot, too. And apparently some owners are trying to tank per
– Yeah.
Yeah. You know. Although I don't know if the Cleveland thing holds much water. But
shout out Stephen Ross.
Yeah, I mean, it's making good choices. You can make good choices elsewhere. The Preds' best player was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
Their record holder for goals in a season before this year was a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
So if you make great choices all up and down, like if they had more secondary scoring and a legit full top six, which you don't have to tank and get the number one pick to get, then they would have been certainly better than they ended up, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't make the choice of Luke Cunningham when he apparently is not anything close to what you thought he was when you brought him in.
Yeah, that's a great point. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they head into a very, very interesting offseason coming up here in the next few weeks and months. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezevic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the great Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, former Preds defenseman. Skillsy, what's going on? How are we doing?
Just trying to readjust to life without the Preds. Not an easy transition.
It is not an easy transition, and it's always kind of weird this time of year when the season ends and you move on to life a little bit without hockey. Skillsy, you know, the players were talking the other day. Yossi talked about this. Ekholm talked about this. I think Forsberg brought it up as well. Obviously, when you lose 4-0 in a playoff series, there is a gap between you and the team that you're playing. What did the way that this series and the way that the end of the season tell you about that gap between the Predators and maybe some of the elite teams in the NHL?
There's a bunch of different ways I could look at it, and I've kind of, you know, I always say, like, I need a good week to take a step back and look at, and this is when I was playing as well. You know, you take a week where you're not invested in it emotionally because it's tough because you lose and you break down all the things that went wrong and how you should have won that, you should have done this, you should have done that. And then when you take a step back, I think the way I look at it and the way I look at the Preds, I just think it was a year of, you know, of that competitive transition, as David Poile called it. And then, you know, you're taking on a team that is oiled and ready to go for a cup run, and they're built for a cup run. I don't know how long their window is going to be. I think this is their year for Colorado. And you have the Preds that grinded out wins all season. They fought for each other. They battled. But it was a grind. And you could see the exhaustion in these guys as the year came to an end, and you could see it in the playoffs where they were doing everything they could to get into the playoffs, and you had a team with Colorado that was, you know, in stride going in and feeling good, and they ran into a buzzsaw. So I think you do have to take a step back and look at, okay, you did some good things, but now you need to build on the good things that you did, and they're not there. They're not even close to what Colorado is. I think Colorado is one of the best teams in the game, so you have to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, so obviously we've talked a lot about, you know, the plan. What is it? What should it be? What can you do if you're the Preds? I thought you made an interesting point on the post-game show after Game 4 talking to Darren. You mentioned Minnesota because I wouldn't – you know, of course, we're thinking in terms of, you know, you got to get it. You got to get more top six forwards. You got to get more scoring. You got to have more secondary scoring. Maybe you need more help than defense corps. But you mentioned Minnesota's changes in terms of culture and how look at how they've taken off now. Suter, Parise, you know, some people look at some of these moves. They're like, I mean, how is that going to make you better? They have gotten better. From that perspective, first of all, how do you view the Preds in terms of culture? But also, like, how important is that? Is that one of those things that maybe on the outside world people underrate, but it's really a key part of a hockey team being successful?
Yeah, I think, you know, how many times have we heard John Hines talk about identity? And that is a culture. That's what Billy Guerin in Minnesota addressed as soon as he took over. Let's change the culture. Let's start from ground zero. Let's play with a mindset. And I think the Preds did play with a mindset. Now, it's funny. You said, boy, we need top six guy. You need depth on here. You need this. You need, you know, relook at everything. And I'll tell you, if you don't win the cup, you could go game seven, lose game seven of the finals, and you're going to say, we needed something. We needed this. We needed secondary scoring. Our checking line wasn't good enough. We need to be better there. There's only one team in the whole NHL that is going to say, yeah, we did it. We put it all together. And that's the one that won. And so I think when you look at what the Preds have done, I thought they were fun to watch. I mean, fighting for each other, doing all the little things, the battle, the compete every night. Now they, you know, there's a bunch of younger guys that are in that culture. They want to play that way, and they're going to get better next year, you know. And I think that's the hard part is, okay, who is in the pipeline and who's going to be that next top six forward that's going to produce? You know, you look at Tolvin and Tomasino, these young guys, McCarron, where are they going to fit in? Tanner Jeannot had this unbelievable year, and I think playing another year where he understands what an 82-game grind is all about, he's going to be better for that. Yakov Trenin, who I thought was fantastic in the playoffs, played probably one of the best forwards for the Preds. He's going to have another year of, you know, 82-game grind where he's going out and he plays with that identity. So these guys are learning the game and they're learning the right way to play, in my opinion. And I think John Hines found that and he got it to click, and especially with the top guys. Look at Duchesne's year, Johansson's year, Forsberg's year. Gronlund had a great year. So they're learning to play under that identity as well. So culture just doesn't happen. You have to work at it. But I think they took a good first step.
Hal Gill on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Hal, I agree with the veteran part of that for sure. Now, the counter argument to that is you had Duchesne, Josi, Forsberg, all these different guys have career years, and he ended up being the second wildcard team and swept in the first round. What happens if those guys take a step back? What do you make of that theory that's been very popular this week on Preds Twitter? And are you at all concerned that maybe those guys all had career years and it's tough to expect that again from them moving forward?
Well, I don't know if I look at it as, you know, Forsberg is the wild card. We don't know what to expect from him next year.
Sure.
Hopefully the same thing. But I think Duchesne had a career year because he was playing the right way, the way that makes the team better and makes him better. Roman Josi, I think, is the same thing, where he was playing within, you know, it's hard to go out and have 90-plus points in a season, but I think he was playing within the structure. The power play was clicking. They were doing things that made him get those points. So I think that's what you have to look at. Johansson having more points this year, I think, is a product of the system that they were playing. Now, the way I look at it is the more you play that system, the more you play that way with that style, the more comfortable you are with it, and you should be able to repeat that. It's not a fluke that Duchesne had big numbers. I think he played the right way, and so he deserved those numbers. And you know, I look on the back end and what they've done. I think Alex Carrier, you know, he's a young defenseman. He's first year playing 82 game season, and he got better. I think we have to look at, you know, when you talk about culture and playing with an identity, you have to be comfortable playing with that identity over an 82 game season. And then once you can be comfortable and manage that, the more you do it, the better you get, then it translates into the playoffs. And I think that's where their identity really could stand out. If they take a couple steps, if they add a couple pieces, that identity is going to stand out more in the playoffs. Because I do think it was, you know, after a few years of missing the playoffs, I think that's what, you know, don't forget the Preds had President's Trophy. They were good all season, and they lost in the playoffs. So that rebuild, that transition was because they want to win in the playoffs. It just takes time to make that transition to where your identity can, you know, ultimately you can win games where you don't have to work as hard because you understand how to manage it. And I think that's the balance, and I think that's what you can expect from this team moving forward is get those numbers from Duchesne. You can get those numbers from Yossi, Johansson, and then you add more pieces to it.
Why do you think, Hal, that this team didn't play as well in the last month or so, even before Saros got hurt?
I do think it was just the grind. I think I think when we looked at the beast line, Sissons, Trennan, and Janot, they were going out. They were game changers, you know, for really 40 to 60 games. They were changing every game they played in, whether it was a big goal, a fight. And I'm not just singling that line out, but as using them as an example, I think it's exhausting to play that way. That's what I mean. You know, they're not used to that grind. You know, Colton Sissons is, he's gone through it, but for a couple of years off, these young guys are coming in. Tanner Janot, that guy plays on the edge every game, and you have to learn how to manage it. And so I think this year it was good for him. I think he did show signs of being just exhausted, mentally, physically, emotionally. You have to bring it every night. And as you get older, and I went through it, you know, I lost 25 pounds my first year. It was just, you don't know how to manage your game over a long season. And so the older you get, the more you learn how to manage it, and then the longer you can keep it going. But I think that's an adjustment period for these guys. You know, I traveling around with them, I'm exhausted. That was a tough year, and I think it showed on the Preds.
Well, Hal, great stuff as always. We appreciate so much you joining us this season, and looking forward to a very interesting offseason here for the Predators. Thanks for joining us this morning.
You got it. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hal Gill, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A good show today. Lots of participation on the phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. People are fired up about this Nashville Predators team.
And apparently on Twitter, too. So our buddy Munson tweeted at me a Jared tweet, which I won't see.
Yes.
But Munson makes me see it. Quote from Stillman, our morning show is comparing John Hines to Bill Belichick.
I knew that was going to happen.
Munson offered to fight him. Thank you, Munson. That's okay. Like I said, did I not say, I'm not comparing him to Bill Belichick? I said that before I said anything.
Verbatim.
Right?
But I knew as soon as you started going down that road,
yeah,
what was going to happen. And it did.
Of course. So again, if anybody missed that, the point I was trying to make on John Hines, Belichick's just a great example of, and it was actually a reaction to a specific text, like, Hines sucks. What? Look at his record. The point being, Belichick was 39-55 in his first 6 years. I'm sure a lot of people thought he sucked. In fact, we actually have a Browns fan who weighed in the text line. He was like, he did suck. And he benched Bernie Kosar, and I've never forgiven him. The point being, you can be a coach early in your career, and you can not do well, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're a terrible coach. I mean, we have on this station, we have Willie saying the word outstanding.
Yes.
Multiple times about John Hines. And then we go to the other end of the spectrum. We have Jared. He's just terrible. Now, are we in the middle? Someone on the text line today also said that, like, we're somewhere in the middle. Which,
well,
know,
yeah.
Things. Yeah. I would agree, but I'm way more on the side of Willie. I wouldn't go outstanding, but I think he's been good.
Yeah.
I think he's been pretty darn good. Jared, I don't know, man.
Well, you blocked him on Twitter. Or not? You've muted him on Twitter.
Muted
him. And I have now changed his name in my phone. He is no longer Jared Stillman. He is Skip Stillman, and that's the way he will be in my phone from now on.
Not Jared Bayless, because that would confuse him with basketball star Jared
Bayless.
NBA
legend. Headband-wearing Jared Bayless, yeah.
Yeah. Skip Stillman. Skipman, remember?
We used to call him Skipman. Yeah, maybe that's what I'll just do. I'll go back to that. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Adam from Portland. Adam, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Yeah, man, hey, it was a really good show today.
Thank you.
So here's my problem, man. I don't like people saying that professional athletes suck. If you want to say that, so I called Hines a proven loser at this level. He doesn't suck. He's probably one of the best 60 hockey coaches in the world. You probably say that because he's coaching in the NHL. So Jared does it all the time. He loves to say that people suck, and I hate it. That's one of my things. But with the Preds, man, let me just tell you, if they're going to make a change, I'm okay with it. If they're going to stay the same, I'm okay with it. But I'm not okay with firing Poile and then hiring another Poile. That's stupid. If you're going to do that, just keep Poile. Say you want to ride it for another couple of years, but don't hire another Poile. If you're going to do something different, just do something different.
Hey, thanks for the call, Adam. I mean, we've talked about that part of it too. Like, if it's when the day comes, whether that's now or 5 years from now, whenever it is, when they move on from David Poile, like, are they going to go outside the organization, or is it going to be Brian Poile? Is it going to be Jeff Kelty? Is it going to be Scott Nickel? I mean, they've traditionally been an organization that likes to go in-house with some of the moves that they make. So, you know, you can argue as to whether or not that's the right approach, and I have opinions on both sides of that argument. But my expectation is when that day comes, they're probably not going outside the organization. That's just the way that I view what I think will happen. So to Adam's point there, what do you think the reaction to that'll be?
Yeah, well, but you may be right, but doesn't it sort of have to do also with where they are when they make the change?
It does.
Because
if this totally falls apart here in the next couple of years, that's going to be a tough sell.
I mean, I can't go back. Let's see. Go back in time and predict the future? That's mind-boggling. But if you went back in time to the beginning of last year, before it turned around and when it was real bad at the beginning of the season, it was looking real bad. I don't know. Had it continued on that path, would it have been a – Yeah,
I don't know.
The successor, now pick the successor. I don't know. I can't go back in time and predict that future. but I think it has so much to do with where they are. And that's the thing. I mean, for Poile, I mean, there's multiple things going on with him. One, I would agree with anybody who says, you know, he's not going to – if you're doing like a full-on rebuild, it's going to take a while. Does Poile want to be here for that whole thing? Is Poile chasing a Stanley Cup? Of course he is. He wants to win a Stanley Cup. He's been in this game his entire life. He has not won a Stanley Cup. He's the winningest GM in league history, but of course he's chasing that. But can that adversely affect how you do your job? I think it can. What have you got?
I'm just laughing at Kevin on the text line. It says, Joe, come on, man. You're comparing him to Belichick and just saying that you're not.
Oh,
he ain't
God.
No Belichick. I can't wait for 2:00. Jared is going to run with this so hard. I can't wait for it.
Yeah,
Joe, you know you can't even preface it. You can't even say I'm not comparing because it that statement doesn't even matter. People will just
John Hines and Bill Belichick.
Well, someone on the text line earlier said so. This John Hines a check.
Yes.
So this is what I said back to Kevin. Ha, comma. I'm using Belichick as an example of a coach who had very little success for several years who ended up being pretty good. I'm not in any way predicting Belichickian success for Hines. I'm just saying you might be a little premature, and there are plenty of other examples, but Belichick's a really good example. He's just a great example of, after 6 years at 39-55 with no postseasons, how many people thought Bill Belichick was all that good of a coach?
Probably not many.
So, he is. I have no idea what Hines is going to turn out to be. I think Hines has helped himself. This is a point I made to Jared, and I totally believe this. Hines in New Jersey, I don't think he had much of a chance. They were bad. But, fine, it was a bad record, all that. I think Hines has helped himself, has elevated his profile by the decision makers in the league with what he has done here. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I would agree. By the way, Kevin has responded. Says, gotcha. When I hear you say Belichick, I'm thinking you mean Hines may one day be the greatest NHL coach of all time. Belichick showed many signs and had won many Super Bowls as an assistant. Hines has shown nothing. This is coming from Kevin.
Well, text line. That's true. But if you want to go that road, give me LT and Harry Carson and Lawrence Marshall and that Giants defense, and I bet you I'm a decent coordinator. Look, Belichick's a great coach, but he is a great example of when you got the players, suddenly you get so much smarter, don't you?
Do we really want to double down on this hot take road, and I could just tell you, hey, maybe Belichick, self-made by Tom Brady. Look at him since then.
Yeah,
want to go down this full thing?
We could do an entire show now on the whole
Belichick sabotage.
Belichick Brady, the credit pie on Belichick Brady. We go from blame pie, Poyle Hines, to credit pie.
Well, we know you're Brady. Just going to praise Brady, right, Joe? You love him.
Have I not said he's the GOAT? He's goated.
You said it.
And I think
you knocked
Belichick's
him down
great
a couple
too.
Of pegs coming out of retirement, but you said it.
Well, you don't have to announce your freaking return during the NCAA selection special. Have a heart, Brady. He's a GOAT. He's goated.
He'd be a great broadcaster, too. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So have we determined on the show today, have we determined that the Predators have a plan? Because I said this earlier, I think the Predators do have a plan. I'm just not necessarily convinced that their plan is going to work. That's kind of my take on the matter.
Yeah, like I agree with Willie. If you're – I don't even know, was it Vengen's article or was it some specific caller who was like, they don't have a plan?
Well, he was talking about – Adam in the interview on DDC the other day was talking about, I don't see what their path is or like their clear plan forward.
So I agree with Willie that they've said – I mean, they set a term, then they changed the term. But basically, trying to stay competitive while getting younger.
Yeah.
So they've done that. So I agree. But the more important thing is, and we asked Willie this, and what did he say? He said, it's a great question. I mean, none of us know, but the question really is, what is the plan now specifically to take this from where they are, which is right around the fringe as a playoff team, even with Forsberg, to a team that can actually compete for a championship. And if it's without Forsberg, then I don't see the path.
Well, that's going to be an interesting discussion that will be continued coming up on the DDC as well. I'll be joining the DDC at 11 o'clock today, so make sure you stay tuned for that. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.